Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, January the 3rd, third day of the new year. Join us this afternoon, Humboldt County Sheriff. It's him, Mike Downey. Hey, guy.
Hey, how are you?
Vertical.
That's good.
I'm going with vertical this month.
Good news.
Yeah, hopefully I can say that for the entire month also.
All right, we'll watch you.
How about you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Doing good.
Really?
Glad to be here. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's Humboldt County.
Yeah. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about, well, lessons learned. We've got the school shooting that happened in Connecticut since last we got together. We'll talk a little bit about some of the safety, some of the related. Might be interesting to talk a little bit about concealed weapons, handguns, pistols, rifles, et cetera, et cetera. As Mike's guys all have them.
Mm-hmm.
And get a deal with them on a pretty regular basis. So we'll talk about a little bit of safety. We'll also do the catch-up of what has been going on in the neighborhood.
Great.
Also. We'll do it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say. It's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Joseph Conrad. Sometime between 1857 and 1924, said, quote, being a woman must be a very difficult trade since it consists principally of dealing with men.
Touche. makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we both can appreciate that.
Yeah. And I always thought we were easier to get along with.
It is interesting, isn't it, the different dynamics? When you guys are training or retraining or, I guess, proofing existing officers, do you talk about the different communication styles that people have and the different receiving styles that people have? I mean, you and I, we get into a fight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what, 20, 30 seconds later, it's over.
Right.
We giggle, we go on, no residual. Have right. a beer after work, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I've never known that to happen if I'm in that situation with a female. It could be months later, and there's still every once in a while a bubble up on that.
Yeah, it could be. You know, and we're dealing with a whole different generation, too. So there's generational issues that come
into
it.
Yeah, that whole disrespect thing?
Well, you know, not so much disrespect as just a different upbringing and reality of what life is and how to respond to different things. So we have, you know, I guess we're getting older, Brian, obviously. Well, but
what was it, Mark Twain beats the alternative?
Yeah, yeah. but the younger, you know, the younger folks getting into law enforcement now are different than when I started. You know, their outlook on things are different. Of course, we're in a society now that information is at our fingertips quickly. You know, all those functionalities have changed so much that from when I got involved in law enforcement, that we have a different type of person that's coming into the field.
So, do you have your staff trained to that? If it's a guy talking to a gal, or a gal to a guy, mm-hmm. or an experienced officer
right.
versus a young.
Right.
Buck or buckette? I mean, is there different ways to communicate inside as well as
outside,
out into the community?
Well, yeah, you know, one of the main things that, you know, recruits learn is communication skills. You know, whether they're dealing with an older population, a younger population, in between. And a lot of those skills they bring to the table with them also, especially in their age group. But communication is key, and they have to learn how to, number one, read people and recognize the danger signs and then be able to respond to those danger signs. Because a lot of times people will be transmitting things to you, giving you the idea that they're about to become violent or become an issue with you. And if you're not catching those signals, yeah, you could be in big trouble. You know, I mean, you have to be able to read that and know that there's about to be a confrontation here or some type of an issue that could be detrimental, yeah, to the officer.
Now, I've read some books that indicate that 90% of all human communication is nonverbal. Now, whether or not we pay attention to the 90%
right.
or not, but that it's that way, which is what, for me at least, makes email difficult.
Right.
And even sometimes telephone. I mean, you can laugh and giggle and you can read tones
right.
over the phone. But with all these other communication forms, that not being there, how do you work that one through, as well as getting people sensitive
right.
to the nonverbals?
Well, you know, that's very true. You know, I'm thinking of an incident right now. I can remember back in my past where I'm talking to a guy and seemed like everything's going well. But as I replay it in my mind and the things I hit on, his hands are by his side and he's clenching his fists while he's talking to me. To me, that was a dead giveaway. You know, those are nonverbal communicative signs that there's an issue here, or just you can look in a person's eye and they can transmit a whole plethora of information to you, and if you're not watching, you know, you can become a victim yourself.
Yeah, the tension
right.
stuff.
Right.
And probably in normal communications, you know, just regular guys talking, you can see it, but it's not life endangering.
Right.
You guys do it out in the field, and it could be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, signs of when a guy's getting ready to run or a gal's getting ready to flee from the scene. You got to be, you know, quick to recognize those signs.
So how do you train these folks to it that have, and we all have been, dummied down growing mm-hmm. up that, you know, it's the words, it's the intent. You don't look for the actions. You don't look for this stuff.
Right. A lot of it is experience. You know, that's why we put people through a pretty lengthy training program so that they understand those things. And then they learn as they go. That's a big part of it is learning as they grow in their profession and keeping those skill sets.
You mean experience?
Experience, exactly. Exactly.
Now, you've got certain officers who don't have the luxury of experience.
Right.
They got showtime. And I would think any of the drug-related ones, you know, if they mm-hmm. drop boom into that,
yeah.
okay, you know, they don't have 3 years to come up to speed with nonverbal and
right.
what does it mean when somebody's starting to do this or do that. Do you guys role play?
Yeah, they'll do that. You know, the training officer will do that, especially if you have, you know, I've got some young guys that have come on with the agency in the last few years that are in their early 20s that come with very little life experience. They have to learn quickly, and they do. You know, I mean, if they don't, then we have to weed those kind of folks out, that they're not suitable for this job. You know, I can remember when I first got involved in law enforcement, I was working with another guy who had been in law enforcement years earlier, and he said he felt that no one should be a cop till they're probably 30 years old. Life experience, you know. Some of that is true, but a lot of the younger people we have now, many of them are coming out of the service, and they have life experience.
They got pounds of life experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So that helps.
KINS, News and Information Times, 320. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. 5 years ago, Mark and Lori Sanchez hit upon an idea. Gift baskets of Humboldt-made food products that folks could send to family and friends here or in distant places. They coined the name Humboldtishes for their collection, and their company, Bella Baskets, took off. Today they have regular customers in all 50 states and 14 countries. One man in Point Barrow, Alaska, regularly orders a meat sauce. A film company in Ontario, Canada, orders barbecue sauce for its catering department. This Christmas season, Mark and Lori expect to sell 700 Bella Baskets. Their taste treats include such things as canned albacore, honey, barbecue sauces, hot sauces, jams, pralined almonds, coffee, and chocolate, all Humboldt County products. Based in Old Town, their business continues to grow, and, just as important, it's bringing outside money into our economy. Their website is bella-basket.com. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and activities that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Mike, certainly school safety or community safety has been a topic of discussion all the national radio talk shows are talking about it. We've got the politicos deciding that they're going to weigh in to either do this or to do that. The experience that you have had here in our county,
right,
dealing with weapons, I know you've dealt with the automatics and you've dealt with the small little, you know, almost boutique-y guns that are in some purses. From your sense, is it a gun problem? Is it a people problem?
Oh, I think it's, you know, I'm always err on the side of a people problem. You know, the gun is an instrument that is designed as a tool. I think there are some that are in our society that in our civilian society that probably don't need to be there. But a small amount. I think the biggest problem that we have is that the current laws on the books, the ways of dealing with those that have violated, you know, simple gun laws are not being prosecuted to their fullest. And I'm not just talking about locally. I'm talking statewide, nationwide. I think we have, laws on the books that just need to be enforced. And I think a lot of that will end. Also identifying those people that have a propensity to that, and then dealing with that.
You guys know who a lot of these folks are, don't you?
Well, we have an idea. You know, I mean, it's like 2 weeks ago, I got a call from Mike Thompson's office, and they asked me to write a letter in support because he's been designated as the chair for this gun alliance or issue, and they sent me a letter. As an example.
Like a template?
Like a template. And I went ahead and fashioned my own, but I stayed away, and I will stay away from infringing upon our Second Amendment rights to a point. I mean, what I said in the letter is we need to identify people that have this propensity and then deal with the person and not blanket it as all guns are bad. But again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. I think there are some assault-style weapons that are truly assault weapons that maybe shouldn't be in the hands of the average person. But what happens is they're going to take this assault gun ban and they're going to broaden it to the point that many weapons that don't belong in that category could end up in that category. And that is a concern. I think that we're going to slowly erode our rights, especially in that arena, to the point that, there's warnings from countries like Britain and areas like that where guns have been taken totally away. And they paid the price during World War II and when they were faced with invasion and that type of thing. And their mantra to us has always been, don't give your rights up in that regard. And I believe that's true. We shouldn't give our rights up.
Now, you have had, unfortunately, experiences with suicides. And I heard something last week that over 50% of all gun-related deaths, it was significantly over 50%, but that's what stuck in my head, are suicide. Has that been your experience in the years of law enforcement in our area also? I mean, we probably have a higher percentage here because of some of our outlaw culture that exists. But is that what you've experienced also, or your gut tells you you've experienced?
I'd say that statistic is probably close to being right on for around here too. 50% sounds like a good number. I mean, not a good number, but a fair number. I think that, a weapon is usually a choice that people, you know, firearm will choose in that regard. So I think that's probably a fair assessment.
What percentage of our community have a concealed weapons permit? Because all those things go through your office, don't
right.
they?
Right. I issue all the concealed weapons permit for the county. So percentage-wise, right now I think I have somewhere in the vicinity of 1,500 concealed weapons permits out in our county.
Is that a lot? Is that not much?
Well,
percentage-wise, it doesn't seem like a lot.
Yeah, Mendocino County, I think, is up in the vicinity of 2,200, which is a smaller population base. You'll have some counties like Los Angeles County, San Diego County, big metropolis counties like that it's hard to get a CCW permit. They don't issue them.
Oh, really? See, I would have thought it would have gone the other way because so many political and so many business people.
Right. Most of the justification that I see for concealed weapons permits in Humboldt County are, number one, to comply with the law. Number two, it's because we are semi-rural. People like to go out in the backcountry and have a weapon and be able to carry it with them. You know, people, store owners, business owners at night that make money drops, that type of thing, will often seek a CCW for protection. Have I ever denied any? Yes, I have. I've denied some along the way that people just didn't have the justification, or I felt the maturity or ability to demonstrate that they should have one. I believe it's a privilege to be able to carry a weapon like that concealed. But then also, I'm the one that's taking on the responsibility because I'm issuing that permit.
So you issue it annually?
Every 2 years.
It's a 2 year.
Yeah, they have to go through a process of paying fees and going through a class, refresher course every 2 years, and show proficiency with the weapon, that type of thing.
But it is different in other jurisdictions. I'm thinking of Texas as an example, or
something. You'll see other states. Yeah, it's different. Arizona, Texas, other states like that have different thresholds and issues that they deal with.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Santa's been to Palco Pharmacy with a full bag overflowing with great ideas. For Christmas season entertaining, you'll find seasonal dishes and glassware for a wonderful festive event. There's some dancing mice and fun figurines that seem to have captured the essence of Christmas joy and fun. And don't forget those very special Christmas cards for loved ones and family members. Those are also available for you. Santa's been there, and now it's your turn to go to Palco Pharmacy in the Scotia Shopping Center, your center for pharmacy and gift ideas this Christmas.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, last thing about some of the shootings and those security challenges that we seem to have throughout the country right now, or what seems to be trendy to talk about at least. Obviously nobody sees that coming to their community.
Right.
Got it. Do you feel comfortable with what is in play in Humboldt County? Or do you have some concerns?
Well, you know, you mentioned, do I feel comfortable? Let me give you just an idea. In the shooting, the Newtown shooting, that dispatch center that they have there is comparable in size to my dispatch center. So it gives you an idea of the how large that agency probably is. So it could happen anywhere. I mean, no one expected that, obviously, where it happened in Newtown. I mean, that was a sleepy little suburbia type place.
Well, Colorado was the same way.
Colorado was the same way. You know, you never know where that could occur. I'm not saying we're primed for one in Humboldt County. I don't believe that by any means. But, I mean, we have to be diligent at all times about those that are around us and what's going on in our own communities and those signs of someone who's having some difficulties. And that's the area we need to focus on, is identifying people that are having some problems and get them the help they need.
The mental health component.
Right. So that this doesn't occur. And, you know, those are the people that shouldn't have access to guns, obviously, or any other type of weapon that could injure someone. Because, you know, I mean, we had in the same week, we had the guy with a knife in China. I mean, those people weren't killed, but there were people were maimed and injured. Any type of weapon can be used, but we need to identify those people that are most susceptible to that.
Yeah. Hopefully nobody is listening who has the inclination, but I have always thought that if you want to really mess up a large group of people, bioterrorism, mm-hmm. You want a school, get into the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we have armed securities in the school kitchens,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there are so many other ways that could occur, but I wonder if the security net is large enough to be able to ferret out that stuff. Or, as you said, is it mental health, and do we need to reallocate some of the mental health funds,
right,
to be able to deal with some of these folks? Not more mental health dollars, right, but a priority to some of these folks.
Well, you know, and that's true, but look on a national level too. How many, since 9/11, how many incidences of mass terrorist possible threats have been identified and stopped by our governmental agencies. And you think about that and you think, wow, there's quite a few that we know about, and those that have been thwarted that we don't know about. So, you know, we live in a world that is not the same as when I grew up. There are bad people out there that want to do bad things, and we can't live in fear.
Like the guy that was wanting the firemen to respond.
Right.
How weird is that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I guess we'll talk to Ken tomorrow about firemen.
Yeah.
There seems to be a suspended reality.
Right.
Or a disconnect with personal responsibility that has been fostered with a lot of these folks. And, you know, if they're off balance, then they're off balance. But if they're not, it's another set of
conditions. And that's why we train our officers in active shooter situations so they know how to respond. I mean, our first inclination, especially in any kind of shooting incident, is to help people as we come upon them. Well, in an active shooter scenario, you go until you find the shooter. You don't stop and
let the medical guys cover the medical stuff. Make sure that. I was going to ask if that was top priority, and yeah, you've already hit that one out of the ballpark. Okay. KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:40. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:44. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Mike, you guys have been halfway busy in the last little bit, not just opening presents.
Well, you can call them presents, I guess.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's say Santa Claus playing in snow, so to speak. What are some of the more significant drug busts or findings that you guys have had over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I've talked about this before, that the Drug Task Force, the countywide Drug Task Force now, is truly a countywide drug task force run by the sheriff's office, but we still have the participating agencies. Just yesterday, we assisted Eureka's POP team with a large a bus of about a pound of heroin and a large amount of cash. You know, that's pretty significant.
The two go together, right?
Yeah, the two go together. That's pretty significant for our area. Last year, we actually took off about 4 pounds of tar heroin for this area, and that's a lot of heroin. That's an extremely large amount of heroin. And then a month ago, the Drug Task Force was able to take off about 3 pounds of methamphetamine, which is a lot of methamphetamine. So you look at the population base of our area and the amount of heroin, methamphetamine, that type of thing going through here. Are we a distribution area now? We're on the I-101 corridor.
The I-101 corridor?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But the 101 corridor, so people going up and down this part of the coastal area of the state, are they transporting through here because of the I-5 corridor and the enhanced amount of traffic there by law enforcement? I mean, that's been identified as a major thoroughfare through California all the way up into the state of Washington is I-5. So
as you look at that, using your intuition, your experience, what did your gut tell you? Is this stuff being made here? Is this stuff here because of the drug culture and the acceptance of it in our area? Because of the prison? Because of the highway?
Yeah.
Because we're not Santa Rosa? What's going on?
We have a great, I shouldn't say great, we have a large commodity here, which makes trading with other types of drugs very desirable, and that's marijuana. Marijuana in our county, because we raise so much of it, is often traded for these other entities, the marijuana or the heroin, the methamphetamine, the ecstasy, those types of drugs. LSD, we're finding LSD off and on through here too. So you can see that there's a bartering issue going on, for these other drugs. So I don't think, I mean, heroin's not being produced here, but it's definitely coming here. The methamphetamine, we haven't had a large amount of labs in Humboldt County. In fact, we haven't really had a lab in quite some time.
So in going back into the Wayback Machine, I can remember the bathtubs and the kids bathing and the being used as a lab, some of the spillage in areas of ground contamination. I've not heard those stories in, about meth.
Right.
In the last, I don't know, what, 5 to 10 years?
I'd say so. You know, when I was working narcotics back 10, 15 years ago, I can remember some hazardous spills that we had that were due to methamphetamine production, that type of thing. We're not seeing it now. In fact, we're glad that we're not, because that lessens the amount of danger to our officers in the field, and which we want to minimize, because when you start dealing with those kinds of chemicals, you're putting your officers in danger.
Is the consumption level also dropping along with that? I'm wondering if it's now being imported versus the demand just not being there.
I think there's still a demand there. I don't know if I could quantify it as being more or less, but there's still a demand there. And you know, we talked earlier about the heroin issue. You know, there's a number of people out there that can function quite well, but they're addicted to heroin. And so you may not even realize that someone is using it. Eventually it catches up with them physiologically because of what they're introducing into their bodies. But there are a number of people that can function for years and seem just as, use the word normal, as you and I.
Well, that's a low bar. Heroin is a natural product?
Yeah, it's derived from
Okay, it's not a laboratory byproduct like meth is.
But the way they may produce it, you have your tar heroin, your heroin's like different ways of producing it for use, and so it depends on how it's being used and how it's been manufactured or the, into its form that it's usable.
So, as you look at the drug scene in our area, is there any change in the trends, or is everything pretty much as it was before and we just see these occasional pop-ups?
I think that we're probably seeing the same amount of drug usage in our area. I don't think it's minimized or gone down any. I don't know if we've had a great big upswing in it. That would be hard to say. We're still obviously dealing with a large amount of illicit drugs in our community. So there are those that are using it, obviously. So but if it's gone up dramatically, I wouldn't be able to say for sure.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to say it's been going down next time we get together, huh?
That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, we can all have our pipe dreams, right?
There you go.
Wait, I can't even say that anymore.
Yeah, don't use that word.
Thanks for coming by, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
We've been Talking Shop with Mike Downey. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.